for this edition of Making Contact. I'm Anita Johnson. Thanks for listening.
A Legal ID. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and I am Dr. Demento, just barely legal.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hi, this is Dwight Yoakam, and you're listening to KBOO.
There's something missing and I'm litting. I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening, and you're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. It is Pride Month here in Portland. We're celebrating Pride 1 month later this month so that everyone had a chance to go to Juneteenth. And today's show is going to be, we're going to be talking about the coming fascist dictatorship and what we as trans and non-binary people are doing to resist it, our thoughts about this apocalyptic nightmare heading our way called the 2024 elections. And we're going to do a series of shows like this, getting on different voices, talking about this really unique moment in American history. And how did we get here? What are we going to do to change it? How are we going to prepare ourselves? What are we going to do to protect ourselves? All of those things. So let's go around the room and introduce ourselves. Would you like to start, Nicolette?
Yes. Hi, I'm Nicolette, and I use they, them pronouns.
Thanks. And Jean?
I'm Jean. It's nice to be back. It's been a while since I participated. I use she and her.
Thanks. And Sheila?
My name is Sheila, and I use she, her.
Great. How's everybody doing tonight? Maybe we go around one more time and, you know, just say a little bit about how things are going for you, Nicolette.
Well, I am dealing with this horrific heat wave. I'm just kind of surviving that, but I'm very excited for the Pride Festival coming up in a couple weeks.
Thanks. Jean?
I'm enjoying the privilege of having a functional air conditioner And I have ice water with some wine in it here and just trying to stay inside.
Sheila?
Well, since I'm on the Oregon coast, it's only just about 68 degrees, crystal clear air, lovely waves lapping at the shore, and I'm just indulging in all the luxury and wondering why people don't live here, except me.
Oh, I know. It's crazy. It's like there's almost a 50-degree difference between...
That's just the beauty of the ocean. It warms the place up in the winter, and it cools it down in the summer. And then sooner or later, people are going to hear about this. They're going to be flooding to the Oregon coast. But in the meantime, you know, I'm sort of hoping that they'll go somewhere else because this is paradise.
Oh, it's just amazing. Yeah. And I'm doing pretty good. I work outside for a living, so I've been working in the heat, but I really love the heat, and so it doesn't bother me so much. I recently did the volunteered all day at the Music City at the Waterfront Blues Festival.
Oh,
that was
yay.
A lot of fun with KBOO, so that was great. And my term as chair is almost over with the KBOO, so I'm really excited to be handing off the responsibilities of being the chair of the board to somebody else at the station. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Thank you for all the work you've done. KBOO's revitalized.
It's I'm so happy KBOO's here. It's been a great voice. They did a really good job in June during Pride Month nationally of having on local LGBTQIA2S+ folks. They did a different theme show every week. They did like trans, they did trans folks, they did all different kinds of voices, BIPOC, and it was really great. So I'm really proud of KBOO. So let's talk, and the reason that I'm with KBOO is because KBOO is a voice of resistance against this coming apocalyptic nightmare. A lot of us skipped the debates. It'll be 2 weeks ago by the time this program airs, but a lot of us skipped the debates. Some of us did watch it, and it was just the biggest dumpster fire I've ever seen. I mean, it's unbelievable that this man who's been convicted of 34 felonies has been impeached, lied about the elections, and has basically made cannon fodder out of transgender teens, is the lead candidate right now for the president of the United States, and that the current sitting president couldn't put together several articulate sentences and completely lost confidence in the Democratic leadership and the national press. And it's, what are we going to do? What are your thoughts? Let's get into this tonight. What are we going to do as transgender people? What are your thoughts about what's going on right now?
Anybody? I have a preliminary comment right off the bat.
Please.
A lot of times people looking back at history think that dictators seize power. In point of fact, they are given power. Dictators emerge out of a society that wants to be ordered around, that wants a dictator, because it enables them to channel their anger, and it enables the person who takes on all this aura of infallibility to be able to, in a sense, not just channel their anger, but to channel their need to feel powerful when they are feeling powerless. So one of the reasons that we as trans people have to keep our eye out is that there are less of us than there are of them, and many of them are very angry, and they're looking around for someone to hang the blame on, and we're just sitting out there with a pick me sign on our backs sometimes. So I'd love to hear what people have to think about that tonight.
Great. Great first topic. Let's go around and see what people have to say. Nicolette, what do you think about what
So, I mean, this particular election is, you know, really dangerous for trans people because, you know, Trump's been saying that on day one, he's going to reverse the expansion of Title IX. He's going to cut federal funding for schools that teach anything about, you know, gender theory or anything trans related. He's targeting gender affirming care, not just for minors, but for adults. Like, he's trying to block Medicare and Medicaid from covering gender affirming care. He's trying to prevent trans people from using bathrooms and locker rooms that align with their gender identity, you know, and all sorts of things that are really putting our very livelihoods at stake. He and his entire cult are trying to silence us and erase us and wipe us out. And that's why it's more important than ever that we don't let them silence us. We have to stay loud and proud.
Thank you, Nicolette. Jean, do you have a response to Sheila's?
Well, yes, of course I do. The set and setting, okay, which you articulated, Emma, in your opening comments, and Sheila's comments, the last thing that I want to see us doing is hand-wringing, okay? The oh, poor me mindset, okay? Yes, we should be scared. We must be scared, pure and simple, because they are coming for us. There's no question about it. It's absolutely out there in all of the rhetoric, all the posturing, all of the activities. But this has been going on for years now. This is not new. We know what we're up against. And so it's time for us in these last 110 days to shift our tactics. This is not the time for philosophical debates. We're not going to re-educate anybody that's already made up their mind. This is a time to tactically and strategically address the middle of the population, those that are still somewhat undecided. And the question becomes, how do we go about that as effectively as we can in our own interest? That's what I hope to talk about tonight.
Great. So we've got some voices of resistance, some ideas, some hopes for discussing strategy and directions forward. I'd like to also, in response to Sheila's question, I'd like to just also have offer a different take. I think that we've already won the culture war in spite of what they're doing. I mean, I think the reason that they're doing what they're doing is because in so many ways we've already won. I mean, they're going to go after the things they can go after to try to hurt us. But, you know, it's just like we play on the show every 2 weeks. There's over 2 million transgender and non-binary people in this country. There's actually more than that now. But there's we have in the 10 years that we had to do the amazingness that we've done, we have gotten on city councils all over the country. We have made it into the media. We have normalized the experience of being transgender and non-binary, and we've gotten into we've made sure that, you know, we're in the media, that we're in the press, that our issues are out there, and we're looking out for our for our kids, for transgender teens who, you know, because we understand what a difference it makes when you can come out as trans and non-binary when you're young. And, you know, when that kind of support can help prevent so much trauma. You know, we've become normalized in the medical establishment. And again, all of these things that we've gotten, it's not like this is not an agenda. We get accused so often of having a transgender ideology. This is not an agenda. It's not an agenda any more than any other struggle for liberation is an agenda. So, I mean, if you think it's a political agenda for people to free themselves and to seek their rights, then yeah, we have an agenda. Our agenda is that we want to survive, and that's our agenda, and we're doing it. Now they're going to try to take some of that away, but we've already come so far that all they can do now is play defense, which is what they're doing. And so I want to make sure that I keep on coming back to that. So what I'm going to be doing is reminding us during our conversation tonight, in as many ways as I can think of all of the progress that we've made, and reminding ourselves that in spite of the coming apocalypse, like, we've already made so much progress that I don't think it's going to be really bad, but I don't think that it's going to be as bad as it was, say, 40 years ago.
Emma, excuse me. I would counterpoint to this extent. Number one, absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, given the culture war, the cultural evolutions of the last 30 years, you're absolutely right. I concur. And I do believe that we have basically won the culture war. However, I don't think that's the point right now. I think the things that we've done to achieve that, you know, are laudable, and we need to continue that on a broader strategy. But right now, we have to focus on a moment in time. And that's what I hope we can focus on here. I don't think, I certainly don't see this, I'm hearkening back to my hand-wringing comment. Yes, we need to be out there. We need to be active. We need to, but exactly what we need to do in these next 3 months is we need to focus. And it's not the time for the philosophical discussions. It's not the time to even enter into debates. I think that there are some tactical things that we need to focus on. Thank you.
So what would you suggest as far as strategy and tactics, in your opinion?
That's great. Let's go around starting with Jean and answer that question.
Okay, Nicolette. Number one, again, yes, we need to be scared. Emma, you're, you know, impending apocalypse that's coming. You know, the Handmaid's Tale. Hopefully everybody out there is, you know, aware of what that looks like. And that is exactly the agenda that the opposition is pushing towards. What are you going to do? Be scared. Vote. This is not the time for demonstrative martyrdom behavior. That time is for later. The last thing we need to have right now as a coalition, LGBTIQ coalition, is handing the opposition in media ammunition. Okay, we don't need demonstrations. We don't. There's a place for that at a different time. The competition right now, political competition, is not about anything other than winning the majority support of the middle of the road, the 20% or so. Any election in the last, 20 something years has been won by single digit, percentages. We are so evenly divided. So we need to be focused on those undecided folks, those folks in the middle. That's where it's going to tip. And so the last thing we need to do is any kind of demonstrative behavior that's going to scare them, that's going to alienate them. So to steal, Pumpkinhead's quote from a number of years ago, but I think it's this is the time to stand down and stand by. Okay, I don't mean crawl into the woodwork, but it's not a time for a lot of demonstrative behavior. I think that we can work towards supporting political campaigns, be it volunteer work, financial support if you can afford it. Those are important. But most importantly, and again, to steal another movement, think globally, act locally. Get out there and vote. Get anybody and everybody that you know supports us to vote. Vote, 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 vote. We can see what there's proof now. We're living the proof of the mindset that got us 2016, that got us Pumpkinhead in the first place. And the whole, I'm not going to vote because I don't like anybody, to hell with it, doesn't work. That's a losing strategy. Vote. Support the closest platform that that is in your best interest, and vote and get be out there. That's what we need to do in the next 100 days. Thank you.
So then you bring up a good point about the people who are sort of in the middle, who are undecided. And I think that brings up the question of what can be done to sway those people who are undecided. You bring up the point that like doing demonstrations and things like that now is just going to scare them. So instead of scaring them, how do we invite them, I guess?
I think that that's a worthy question, Nicolette. And I wish that I had specifics to offer there. I think I was coming from the one thing we don't want to do is scare them. Okay. I think we could certainly have some conversation here or in one of the next shows about, how can we, show that we're not a threat to some of these people, but the last thing we need to do is show them that we're causing unrest and that kind of stuff. There's enough unrest in this world right now. We don't want to be we've already been targeted as a problem. Don't give them any more ammunition.
So one of the places I always like to go to kind of keep track of what's going on right now is I go to a website called Erin in the Morning. That's spelled Erin in the morning.com. And it's run by Erin Reed, who is a full-time journalist. And she specifically focuses on reporting on the transgender non-binary community. And she updates her website daily with news and information about what's going on in in all things that are newsworthy that affect the trans and non-binary community. One of her best tools that you can find on her website is the Anti-Transgender Legislative Risk Assessment Map. And if you look at the map, you can see that basically what's going on is that almost the entire middle of the country has become a danger zone for transgender youth and for trans adults. And it's gotten really close to us. I mean, Idaho is almost one of the worst states in the country. Idaho and Montana and Utah, which are all our neighbors, have become the worst states in the country for being transgender or non-binary. The only states that are worse are Florida, Oklahoma, Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, and Kansas. And there's these blue, like, zones basically on the West Coast and in the Northeast that are safe right now. And they basically everything that we look at that's safe is kind of tracking where people are also voting Democrat in a majority. Now, I'm not a Democrat. I'm an anarchist, so I don't even support this system. But I mean, I'm smart enough to see what's going on. And it's really clear to me that what we have right now is we have a really thin, there's this really thin space that's, you know, kind of protecting us from basically having the skies break open on top of us. And it's already happening. I mean, it's already happening in some states. I mean, it's happening in Florida. And what we have to do is I'm probably going to vote Democrat for the first time in like 40 years because I don't know what else to do right now. I mean, this is so scary what's going on. I'm not telling people as a journalist, as a producer of a radio show, I'm not like telling people how to vote or making a call to action in that way, but I am talking about my own personal view. It's really clear. I mean, if you look at the maps, the states that are safe for transgender folks are the states that have overwhelmingly Democratic majorities. Like here in Oregon, right now we have a Democratic supermajority, and that gets us, you know, a lesbian governor, a married lesbian governor. Before that, we had a bisexual governor. You know, we have some of the best protections in the state. And basically what's happening is that all of the people in the middle of America are fleeing to the coasts. I mean, every time I do a show, when I'm talking to somebody from, you know, like when we did the show that just reran last week with Deborah Porta, the president of Pride Northwest, about the Pride Festival coming up this month, you know, Deborah talked about all these people who are fleeing here, sometimes with nothing except maybe their clothes. You know, they're fleeing. They're working so hard to get out of where they are. At the same time, though, when you look at the big cities and even in these states that look like they're nightmare states, you know, like Texas or Tennessee, when you look at the big cities, when you look at Houston, Nashville, Atlanta, Austin, you know, when you look at these big cities in these southern states, they're almost as blue as we are. You know, the big cities are these havens for queer people. So even in these red states where they're just trying to erase transgender rights, we're winning the culture war. I mean, we're there, but we have to stop Trump. I mean, we have to stop Trump. Trump is a threat to our democracy. Mm-hmm. He's a threat to our safety. He's a threat to our mental well-being. He's a threat to the planet. You know, this is someone who he followed a play. It's really ironic because Trump followed the playbook that was written by Roy Cohn. And Roy Cohn was somebody who was queer himself and learned how to survive New York politics as a gay man by doing the kind of antics that Trump basically emulated. Everything that Trump did, he learned from Roy Cohn. I mean, literally everything that he did, he just followed Roy Cohn's playbook. And, you know, there's people like that. I mean, we have people that we have to claim as our own who are just these horrible figures. And Roy Cohn is one of those people. And, you know, we have to try to figure out what to do about, I mean, this liar who has used social media in every way possible to spread misinformation about us, misinformation about immigrants, misinformation about people of color. You know, he's basically found every place that he could push hate. He understood that hate is a powerful force. Hate is something that unites people who have fear and don't have hope. And we have to turn that hatred into hope, and we have to turn the scale on. We have to let people see, you know, the emperor for what he is. He doesn't have any clothes. He's all he has is his hatred and his fear. And we have to help people see that. I mean, we're above that. We're a stronger country than that. We are not a country that is rooted in hatred. We're not rooted in fear. We're a country that can rise above this. We have the potential for it. So,
Emma, I completely concur with your big picture comments. There's no question but that is the ongoing big picture mission. However, we have 100 days. And in the midst of your comments there, I appreciated what you said. It's very pragmatic. It's realistic. Is this the system we wish we had? No, but this is the system we have. We have to work with that right now. And the right now is there's only two sides to vote on. And I know which one is going to at least not come after me. So, you know, it's not a complex question at this point. I'd like to hear something from Sheila. She's been awfully quiet, unusually quiet.
That means that I'm usually a blabbermouth. Well, here's a thank you so much, Jean. This is something that I've listened with. These have been wonderful comments that I've been hearing from everybody. It was worth being silent about. What I will say is this. Both sides are absolutely true. We have been very effective, and we've done a lot in a very short time. And the mere fact that you don't have to define terms anymore is itself incredible. The penetration into the professions is astonishing. It's almost impossible to hear high-level academic discourse without having some deference to pronouns, some deference to the fact that we exist. And that very linguistic triumph is part of why they are afraid. In other words, it's our success that breeds their fear, and their fear brings their hatred on. So there's always a difference between strategy and tactics. We've won the strategic aims that we've had of recognizing our existence, of making people aware that we are here, that we're not going anywhere, that we don't have a choice to go anywhere. We have to live amongst people. So it all comes down to tactics, and that was what Jean was emphasizing, is what do you do to make individual lives better? And particularly, how do you train people fighting strategic battles to think tactically? And Jean and I talked about this before the show, the idea of how do we recover survival skills that we may have forgotten during the course of our triumph so that we can recover them in time to be effective when we need them. And I think that's what Jean is emphasizing. It's so important to not forget how to survive. The mere fact that we have a transgender day of remembrance every year shows we haven't completely arrived. And it always makes me sad how many of our people are succumbed to violence, whether initiated by other people or by ourselves towards ourselves. And my thought is you triumph when you have a quality life and when you survive. So what we could do is open this up a little bit and ask each of us, how in our own lives how we've managed to survive. How did we have the luxury to be able to broadcast on radio and know that there isn't going to be somebody beating us up tonight or firing us from our job or kicking us out of our housing? How did we get here? And then try to share some of those survival tactics with other trans people.
Well, I'm gonna move on this question, Sheila. So, I mean, I think that we do survive, and I think that we survive by being strategic, just like we've survived our entire lives by being strategic. I think that we survive both individually, and we also survive culturally by being strategic. So I think that one way that we can survive is we need to look at places that don't have the benefits that we have, the blessings that we have, and we need to support those places. We need to look at states like Idaho and Montana and Oklahoma and Florida and find out what's going on in these states where, you know, transgender people are literally becoming criminals. I mean, or medical professionals are becoming criminals if they support transgender people. And we need to figure out how we can support them. I mean, if there's some way that we can help folks in Idaho push back, I mean, if we support transgender politicians, maybe we need to identify who's running for office that's trans or non-binary, like the Montana legislator who got banned from the Montana state legislature last year for speaking out against a bill that was targeting trans youth. If we can, right. If we can identify those individuals, if we can support the National Center for Transgender Equality, which also tracks this sort of thing, if we can keep track of people who are actually keeping track of this, like Aaron Reed, who produces Aaron in the Morning. And if we can let people know what's going on around the country, we have to work, and we also need to work in collaboration with the 2S LGBTQIA plus community as a whole, because this attack is on all of us. I mean, we can't really be in silos right now. We can't just be the trans people community or the non-binary community. We have to be the queer community, the queer and allied community. And even more than that, we have to be the queer allies, immigrants, BIPOC, and, you know, community. We have to be the same people that are trying to take away our rights or have already worked so hard at taking away the rights of women to have access to reproductive health care in, you know, like 14 states in this country, in 20 states, I think, actually, it's illegal to get an abortion. And we have to work in collaboration with everybody who's our ally, you know, across this country. But we really need to look specifically at the places where we're at risk. I mean, there's going to be places where we know for sure that if we don't support people, our allies in those states, that they're going to lose. And if they lose, we're all going to lose. So, you know, I think it's important for us to really target and to be strategic right now in the next 110 days. I mean, we need to figure out where in this country do people need our support, try to figure out how to support them. I mean, we've got it really good here in Oregon. I know that it's not great. I mean, if you come out to Clackamas County where I live, it's not so great out in Clackamas County. I mean, it's still hard for us to put together a Pride Festival out here, but we're doing it. But, you know, we're in the Portland umbrella, so we're safe. But we need to look at those states. We, especially Idaho is our nearest neighbor. I mean, Idaho is one of those states that's like could feed the fascists, you know. Idaho is a state that could feed this fascist movement. And if we can support our allies in Idaho who are fighting back against this vicious anti-trans, you know, anti-immigrant, anti-woman agenda, you know, then we can take some small steps. And let's look all around the country. I mean, let's lift up the voices of people in states where we know their voices really matter. Like, there's probably a lot of people in the Pacific Northwest and around the country who don't know about, like, Marissa. And we need to, like, let people know about these people in other parts of the country where it's really bad. I mean, the states that everybody's fleeing from to come here, all of those people know someone where they've left, who is still there and has to stay there because they can't afford to move. They have family, they have jobs. And we need to support those people and figure out how to be supportive to them. In addition to that, we also have to figure out how to support organizations that are offering direct aid to trans and non-binary folks in states where, you know, different things are being criminalized. So we have to figure out how we can support people in states where transgender people are under threat and where, like, they can't use the bathroom, where trans teens don't have access to hormones, they don't have access to puberty blockers, they don't have access by from the time they're 16 and older to surgeries. We need to figure out how to support those people. Maybe support them to come here to get some of the services that they need, even if it's just to come here for the services and then to go back to where they're from. I mean, that's one of the things that the women's movement is doing right now. I mean, the not just women, but anyone who can give birth is doing that right now, you know, for reproductive health care. I mean, people who have to leave their states just in order to have a safe abortion, they're coming here. You know, maybe we need a trans and non-binary clinic out on the Idaho-Oregon border, just like NARAL's doing. And, you know, we can support organizations too that we already know have a history of supporting trans youth and transgender people. So, like, when you support a clinic, if you support a women's health clinic, I guarantee you, you are also supporting transgender healthcare, because that's one of the things that, you know, NARAL, that's one of the things that Planned Parenthood has been so front-facing about. I mean, in addition to reproductive healthcare, they've also been upfront in, you know, really on the cutting edge in terms of making sure that trans non-binary folks have access to appropriate services. And so, you know, maybe we need to support those clinics out in those border states, on those boundary states, so that trans people can come to those, you know, those states if they need services, if they need access to hormones. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can go across the state line, get something that they need, go back across the state line. I mean, whatever it is that we need to do to support people, is those are some of the things that we could do. I mean, there's so much to do, though. So those are some of my thoughts. I've been talking a lot.
Emma?
So, yeah.
Some thoughts on this. I never mean to give up the strategic, but the strategic, by definition, takes years, and it's something that it's that constant pressure of maintaining identity and moving on. When I speak of tactics, what I mean is short-term survival tactics to survive in individual lives. And the reason I wanted to invite people to share their own individual perspective of where they're actually living right now is I myself am fairly safe. I'm not out on the street. I'm not homeless. I'm not involved in sex work. I've had an advantage of an education, and all of those things put me in a situation where I don't even have to be strategic or tactical. And many of us that have been out for a long time have just gone on to live our lives. We're not even working anymore on the street level, but I've never forgotten what street level action looks like. When the whole LGBT movement had its beginning, there were two major groupings. One was the Gay Liberation Front, and the other was the Gay Activist Alliance. And there was a difference in the strategy between the two. One tried to say, let's liberate everybody, let's liberate the world, and we'll be fine. And the other group said, we can't do everything and save the whales at the same time. What we have to do is we have to first take care of ourselves. And when AIDS was at epidemic proportions and there was nothing going on from the government or anybody else to help us, that's when ACT UP under Larry Kramer started. And ACT UP was very tactical. it took it right to the power source. It went, and it was massively confrontational, but it had to be because it was a matter of life or death. So what I think Gene was suggesting, and what I'm kind of suggesting also, is that while we're waiting for strategy to sustain our progress and to perhaps even advance them further, we may have to do a kind of a duck and cover move where we have to survive. And I think people need to be ready for that. And I think that that's what I mean by sharing actual life experiences of what has been successful for us when things were not as good as they are right now, so that there, the elders, particularly myself and others, can say, how do we survive? What can we learn from our past? What can we learn about the emperor and empress and the gay court system? What can we learn from ACT UP? What can we learn from early pride marches where they were only a one single day of not being yelled with epithets towards us, and where we didn't have a whole month to be proud? We just were asking for freedom. And I've always preferred the Freedom Day march as opposed to the Pride Month, because I don't like overkill. I don't want us to think we're more secure than we are. So if anyone has some real specifics, I'd love to hear them tonight.
Oh, well, definitely chamomile tea. I'd say chamomile tea and a good joint is a big help.
Uh-huh. That's fair.
You know, I want to speak to Sheila's challenge, because, you know, it is a challenge, and the only way that we have historically survived. And I think you said something about duck and cover, and that's true. You know, being a martyr isn't going to, you know, win your battle in the meantime. And I just have to hammer this one home right now. Emma, you were right. Okay. You don't have to be a Democrat. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's about coalition. It's about supporting the best that is out there to be available. And that's what we need to focus on right now. Because regardless of state policies, many of the state policies that are supporting us, the funding for a lot of care that we receive, that goes, a lot of that goes back to Obama era policies regarding federal funding and grants that support a lot of what you were talking about, Emma. And if we lose this federal election cycle, and we end up with two or possibly even three branches of our federal government, these states, Oregon, Washington, these safety zones are going to lose a lot of the resources that come from federal funding that are creating these safe spaces. We have to win this election. And the only way we can win this election is to vote and get anybody and everybody, and, you know, and support. And we, you know, that's the 100 days here, honey. If we don't win this, a lot of what we've been enjoying is going to be seriously compromised at the federal level. It won't be safe here anymore. Be scared and do, you know, this is what we can do right now.
Vote. Be scared and do something about it.
Vote. That's it. It's as simple as that.
Do we have some safety tips, though? just in case we lose. That's what I'm really kind of asking for, is what is it that's made our lives possible so that we live with a measure of grace and dignity that at other times of our lives we did not have? And maybe I need to be very specific here. What I learned early on was to pick what were safe zones and what were not. I knew that there were certain places that I couldn't go, contexts where I could not thrive, and I learned how to pick my battles very carefully. And I also knew when to retreat. And that's what I mean by tactics. It means don't become a victim. Don't get beaten up. Don't get killed. Don't get raped. Don't have any of the horrible things that happen to us all too often. And connect with people that can advance your cause at the micro level. Make sure you have housing. Make sure you have enough to eat. Make sure that you don't get into addiction. Make sure you don't have a relationship with someone that's going to use you. All of these are really therapeutic tips for surviving in the world. And oftentimes I think we internalize our own self-destruction because we look at how others treat us, and before long we're treating ourselves that same way. So I'm always urging people to be their own best you in your own best context, and then make your life work. And anything you can learn from other people how to do that is what I mean by tactics.
So I'll tell you what, Sheila, we're going to do at least 3 shows about this fall. I think we've got enough material for 4 shows. So why don't we have our next show be a self-care show, where we're going to talk about how do we take care of ourselves during the coming apocalypse? And I shouldn't say apocalypse. That's not that bad. But how do we take care of ourselves in the face of what could be a really bad turn of things for a while for our community? So why don't we make that our next show? We'll really focus and we'll ask everyone to think about that. If you think of someone you would like to bring on as a guest who maybe is pretty knowledgeable about that, I mean, I can think of a couple of people who might be good to come on our next show to talk about this, because they specialize in this kind of work. So why don't we do our next show about self-care and survival? Because I know that's where you're going, Sheila, and I can think of a lot of ways that transgender people and non-binary folks always survive. I mean, but now those skills are needed perhaps more than ever. But believe it or not, we've actually almost used up an entire hour and we really only have like 3 or 4 minutes left. So it might be a good time to kind of try to wrap things up and, you know, say anything that we haven't had a chance to say so far for this first show.
I mean, I just want to hammer the point home that we've all been saying. It is more important now than ever to get out there and vote and to tell everyone you know to vote.
Amen. I will tag on to that and simply say, you know, we are not electing a monarch. We are not electing a dictator. We are electing a team and a platform, a policy platform. Personalities, so much of what is being, fed to us via media about personalities and mental capabilities and all this kind of stuff. Government doesn't work in a vacuum. And don't think in terms of personalities or somebody's particular charisma. You've got to think in terms of what policies are going to be best for you. And right now, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's the Democratic Party is the best we're going to get out of this if we can.
I agree. Sometimes there is no perfect option, and you really do have to settle with the better option, the lesser of two evils, even if you would prefer that things be better than that.
Well, I think that what I take away from our conversation today is that it's really important to vote. People are motivated. Everyone on the show seems to be motivated to really bring about a good change in things. And I think that if the four of us represent what almost every single transgender, non-binary, lesbian, gay, bisexual, intersex, asexual, two-spirit, intersex plus unnamed categories of people are feeling right now, then that's a lot of people, just from the queer community, let alone the immigrant community, the religious minority community, the, women's reproductive health community. All of these communities are feeling this right now, and they all want to fight back. And I think that's such a great thing. I mean, I think this is going to just lead to something really amazing. We may not see it right away, but I think that this energy that is rising up in this country in the face of what we're looking at has the power to transform everything. And I'm really excited about that.
Emma?
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you, yeah.
Okay, well, my closing comment is I'm very interested in our self-care segment to deal with the intergenerational aspects of this person. And if I can say it in a lighter tone, I started my trans life wanting to be like Shirley Temple and be cute and dimpled and have everybody love me. And I'm ending my life as Betty Davis in her later years. And all I can say is fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us on Trans Positive, and happy Pride Month.
Yes, happy Pride.
Happy Pride. Thank you for joining us, everyone.
Happy Pride.
So
transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC
or Nebraska
or Maine
are Idaho
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your co-workers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this. These bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Tune in to KBOO for our annual live broadcast of the Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, broadcasting from Friday, July 19th through Sunday, July 21st. This year's festival features Johnny Wheels and the Swamp Donkeys, Jujuba, and Tyrone Hendrix and the PDX Soul Collective. Again, that's KBOO's broadcast of the Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, live from St. John's. The broadcast starts at 4:30 p.m. on Friday and at 1 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. More information can be found at kboo.fm/cathedralpark24.